This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
July, everybody listening in the United States of America from coast to coast and everywhere in between. It is my honor to do this show, and I've had the chance to sit in this studio behind this microphone and do it on the road in what I call the talking pods, not just here in the United States, but in other parts of the world. And people are always so fascinated by America, and I grew up in the land of liberty, really just outside of Philadelphia, and I've said this many times on the show, it really, really means something to me, and there's great pride that I feel when we celebrate the 4th, and I put the flags out on my lawn, and I went with my aunt who's visiting from Florida. We went to the local parade and saw, you know, the firemen and firewomen waving from the parade and just watched. And I know many of you may be listening and have watched fireworks and whatnot from coast to coast. And just again, thank you so much for letting me sit in the seats. And just a reminder that there is so much to be proud of when you think of the 200 plus years. We're almost at 250, and it's just absolutely amazing the things that happened in our past to get us to where we are today. And as much as we complain and gripe and get upset at things that happen and things we don't like from the federal government or state government or our representatives or whatever it might be, it's just a good time to take stock of where we are and how lucky we are where we live. Coming up on the show, some great people, some that will really, really inspire you for sure, including a fun conversation with someone off our shores in New Zealand, Alice Love. I talked to her about milking a cow. I have tried to milk a cow so many times, and I have not done a very good job. She grew up on a farm and has a great story to tell about that. Bill and Patrick Pardue were so wonderful that I thought it was worth a rewind on this holiday of the father and son duo, and the proud father having the son edit so much of what he put out there in his books. And then a conversation with Josh Charles, too, as well, equally as important. And coming up in our next hour, James Beck on kindness, very powerful. Also, what do you do when you're so stressed? There is nothing that will relax you. You can't meditate. You think that's ridiculous. You can't do half the things people say. You know what you do? You do art. You do coloring. Take you back to those coloring days. I remember I had that giant box where you sharpened the crowns, where you had the the sharpener, Crayola's big giant, I don't know, 120 something different colors, whatever it was. But anyway, great conversation with Marjorie Fleur in our second hour, and then the traveling duo James and Barb McCollum. So a lot of things coming up this hour and next hour as well. And a good reminder that you can share any of your thoughts on what's happening in your backyard that you want to share with us at Kate of KateDelaneyRadio.com 24/7. All right, a couple of things to talk about that aren't so great. I just got word of this a while ago, but 8 people were injured in a shootout near a car wash in Fort Worth, Texas, early on Sunday morning after a group of guys got into an argument. One of the men left the scene during the argument, returned with a gun, and started firing toward the group of people. And this happened like around 1:30 in the morning. Most of the victims, sadly, are believed to be innocent bystanders who weren't even involved in that argument. So something that the Fort Worth police hated to encounter, and sad to see that. All eyes, not just in the United States, but on the world, I think a lot of people are talking about the demolition of the partially collapsed condo, and that's happening, and is what's happened now. It's you know, has to happen. So Sunday was the day. So of all things on 4th of July, and there's just so many conversations about documents that are being shared that are shedding some light on urgent conversations leading up to the condo collapse, and the big questions still abound as to the tower and how it was just a catastrophe in slow motion. And I've said this before, if somebody showed me that, I would think it was something that I saw a few times when I was in Vegas, where a part of a building was, really a whole building was imploded, but the way it came down in slow motion. And it just is, we know this, I mean, it is just absolutely awful what happened at that Surfside condo collapse just outside of Miami. I mean, right there in Miami, you know, just crazy, crazy, crazy. All right, the other big thing I think that happens on 4th of July is the, I know, hot dog eating contest. Joey Chestnut, I love you, dude. Anyone who can do this guy, he blows me away. He's the defending world champ. He broke his own world record on Sunday. Could you eat, I'm being serious, could you eat 76 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes? That's what he did. It's the 14th time that the top-ranked hot dog eater in the world won the title in the last 15 years. 26. He put 26 down in the second place finisher, Jeffrey Esper, and one more than Chestnut managed last year. But let me say this again. 76 for Joey Chestnut. Wow. It's an annual event. It's become such a big deal. Last year's contest was held in a private location. Only the media were there because of the coronavirus pandemic. So this was a big, big deal. And they say the first, by the way, because I tried to look this up, the first time they've ever did this is that Nathan's held the contest back in 1916 on July 4th. Can you imagine? And to show how patriotic they were, there was the whole idea of eating these hot dogs at Nathan's stand in Coney Island. I believe it. I don't know how anyone does it. I don't. I mean, I can't even. I'm trying to think how many is the most hot dogs I've ever eaten, and it's nowhere near 30, 20, not even close, not even close. And then we talked about this last week, but a couple of you sent me a couple of emails about where were we with the vaccine. 20 states have reached the goal to partially vaccinate 70% of American adults by the 4th of July. We're seeing the problems with the Delta variant, the worry there, it's spreading, and there's concern about that. The U.S. reached its highest vaccination rate in mid-April. So that was way in the beginning, when the 7-day average of doses administered daily topped 3.3 million. At that time, 1.8 million new people became fully vaccinated each day. So nowhere near that 70, or I shouldn't say nowhere near, but not close to that goal of having the herd immunity, the 70%, but a lot more people vaccinated, I guess, than not, if you think about where it first started, I guess is the best way to put that. So like I said, happy 4th of July. I hope that you had a chance to at least watch some fireworks, even if it was on the tube. You know, there's always such great fireworks, and we see them from Boston to New York, et cetera, because a lot of towns and cities where I live, they, because of budget and the pandemic last year, they usually do wonderful fireworks, and they couldn't do it this time around. But there was certainly plenty to be had, and I just love watching the eye candy, as I'm sure many, many of you do too as well. So sit back, relax, and much more coming your way on the flip side.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. It gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps. As restrictions come to an end and you get back to work, do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop. And cancer dies in oxygen. A 1 pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com. So the 4th of July is coming up, and 4th of July, it's interesting. For me, I mentioned this already, I grew up just outside of Philadelphia, and it was always a big deal to me, the whole Declaration of Independence. I was fascinated from the time I was a kid about the founding fathers and how the government was established and all things related to breaking away from the king and visiting the battlefields and all that stuff. So it's perfect to have Josh Charles on with us, an Epic Times columnist and a former White House speechwriter for Vice President Mike Pence, also a number one New York Times bestselling author and historian, to talk about Tom Jefferson's top 10 rules for life, just in the nick of time. Thanks so much for coming on, Josh.
Thanks, Kate. Appreciate it.
So let's, first of all, because you're a historian, so the impact Thomas Jefferson had on our nation and what we celebrate on July 4th, how, in your terms, how, what do you think it was? I mean, obviously, everybody's going to say he had an impact, but what do you think?
Well, I think he really puts the left lies to the he really shows them for what they are. The reason I say that is because I'm thinking of a letter that Abraham Lincoln wrote where he said it was like all honor to Jefferson or hail Jefferson, something like that. He was saying that in the heated moment of a revolution, you know, in the Declaration of Independence, he put in this abstract principle that Lincoln said would be, you know, a warning and a stumbling block to all forthcoming tyranny, and you know that our rights come from our Creator, and that governments are instituted to protect those rights. And so, you know, Lincoln appealed to that, Winston Churchill appealed to that, Frederick Douglass appealed to that, Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to that. So, you know, Jefferson is the one who really put these timeless principles in there. That while he himself was not obviously living up to it perfectly, as were some of the other founders, nonetheless, they remain in many ways completely true through all time. and a rebuke and a stumbling block, as Lincoln said, to all harbingers of future tyranny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give Jefferson a thing for that.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree.
Always a little thing, you know.
Yeah, just a little thing. Always my favorite. Always my favorite. Along with a little Ben Franklin thrown in. You know, I like some of Franklin, was eccentric kind of guy, but definitely contributed and chipped into some things that I think are still very relevant today.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. All right, Tom Jefferson's top 10 rules for life. What are his top 10 rules?
Well, these were from a letter he had at the end of his life, and it was a really touching letter. There was a family that named one of their sons after him, so Thomas Jefferson, and then his last name was Smith. But they named him his first and his middle name, Thomas Jefferson. And so he gives this wonderful letter, and actually has a beautiful introduction that I think is very relevant to today. And this was his overall advice. Then he gave, you know, top 10 individual pieces of advice. But he said, adore God, reverence and cherish your parents, love your neighbor as yourself and your country more than life. Be just, be true, murmur not at the ways of providence, which means don't complain. So shall the life into which you have entered be the portal to one of eternal and ineffable bliss. And so, you know, this idea that when we're born into this world, we're born with a set of duties. And only by complying with those duties can we attain happiness, both temporal and, as Jefferson said, even eternal happiness. And, you know, especially as far as today, where many of us, I don't know about you, I suspect you have, you know, traveled to a number of places in the world. I have as well. I've been to all the continents except Antarctica. And whenever I come home, I find that I'm always extremely grateful to live in America. Very grateful for our country. And that's what, you know, that's what's called the virtue of patriotism. It doesn't mean that your country is always right. There's plenty of things our country's done that aren't right. Things that the government has done that I don't agree with. But I still believe in that fundamental virtue of patriotism, just like the virtue of honoring your parents. It's when you honor your country like you honor your parents for things that you can never fully repay. Your parents, you know, they provide for you. They cover, put a roof over your head. They give you food in your stomach. And in a similar sense, our country provides a place of safety, a place of security, a place of prosperity, and possibilities that we could never provide for ourselves. And so when he says, murmur not at the ways of providence, that particularly strikes me today, because that, you know, remembering that gratitude that we owe our country, regardless of its imperfections, is something I think we could really stand to regain today.
Oh, I so agree. Virtue of patriotism. And you're right. I've traveled all over the place, and I say this all the time. Despite differences and things, some things that I don't like, America still is the greatest country, I think. And every time I come back, I feel very, very fortunate.
For sure. Well, I can go through the top 10 really quick if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I wanted to cherry pick a couple of them. Let's do that.
Sure.
So one of them he says, and I think of the procrastination thing, his number one, we'll go right to this, his number one rule was never put off till tomorrow what you can do today. Was he that kind of guy, or did he have any procrastination in him?
I think Jefferson half lived up to this. In some serious ways, he failed this rule himself, notably in his finances, and also on the slavery issue. You know, he was in theory very opposed to slavery, but he kept putting it off and kept putting it off. Now, there's some complexities with all that. You know, the law in Virginia made it a little more difficult. You couldn't just, you know, emancipate a slave, you know, just like that. There were some more complexities involved. But overall, this was, you know, this is the great stain with Jefferson, is the man who was saying that all men are created equal. You know, he fundamentally lived himself as if all men weren't equal, you know, because he enslaved some of them. And so that would have been, you know, the main thing where he procrastinated. But as far as applying it today, I think it applies in many, many realms. But as we're seeing with the runaway government spending, the increasing inflation, which is, I would argue, driven by our monetary policies mostly. You know, we've been putting off till tomorrow what we can do today for decades now, at least since the 60s or 70s. And I'm concerned the price will come due here pretty soon for my generation. I'm a millennial, and your generation as well, and Gen Z. And so we have been violating this rule big time, and there's no free lunch. And at some point, the price will be due.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And there's some other policies, I would say, that would fall into that same category.
Totally.
It's interesting, you know, like you think of the situation at the border, right? So Reagan was all over this in the beginning, and ever since I've been in talk radio, we've been talking about the same thing over and over and over and over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And very, just a little movement here and there, but never all the way fully to, okay, here's what we need to do, here's what we need to adopt, and here's how we can streamline this, fix this, figure this out, and then it gets worse and worse and worse, and then everybody is furious, and there's a lot of finger pointing, and I mean, we could talk all night about that. How about if we go from 1 to 10, and
sure.
Number 10 was when angry, count 10 before you speak. If very angry, 100. So then it makes me wonder about the temperament of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah. I think he was actually pretty good at this one. He was, he was famously quiet at the Continental Congresses. And when he spoke, even his inaugural, you know, a lot of people could barely hear him. You know, we have the prepared remarks. But when he gave his inaugural speech, you know, people could barely hear him. He was just speaking barely above a whisper. So he was actually pretty good at keeping his temper in check, from everything we know. But, you know, again, applying it to today, you know, Jefferson knew that what distinguishes human beings from animals is that we have a rational brain. What, you know, I'm a Catholic, and what the church would call a rational soul. And that rational soul allows us to perceive what is right and wrong and choose. That doesn't mean everything's always crystal clear, but in general, we can perceive right and wrong, and we can choose with free will to do what's right. And so Jefferson believed that, and so that means that if you're going to live according to our human nature, which is to be rational, we need to keep our passions, you know, the things that draw us to overdo it with our emotions or with eating too much food or getting lust out of control or greed or power, you know, all these things that we're attracted to and tend to take us from the path of what's reasonable, we need to keep those in check. And obviously when we're angry, we're most prone to do that. And, you know, when you relate it to contemporary politics, you're talking about the finger pointing earlier. I think we could stand to do this. And actually, this isn't related to Jefferson, but there's one book I've recommended, you know, second after the Bible, for a decade or so, and that's Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, which he published in 1985. And it's basically about how everything in education and politics and religion had been dumbed down by electronic media into a form of entertainment. And it basically habituates us to only getting things in little, you know, snippets, when actually we live in a complex world with complex issues that require, you know, deep thought and deep dialogue, right? And so I think applying that lesson with Jefferson's rule, you know, when we're angry, count to 10, you know, if we're very angry, count to 100, you know, let's apply it with social media, you know, and I actually find myself doing that all the time. You know, I only post maybe about 5% of what I'm actually thinking or even start to type. Because I pull back a lot, or I've just gotten better at it over the years, and I won't even type it because I realize, I need to think about this more.
Yeah.
And, you know, people ask me to write columns all the time, and I like to do that, but I don't like it to the extent that it requires me to instantly react to everything because that's not very thoughtful.
Josh, thank you so much. Josh Charles, you were tremendous.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over 1 million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki. portion of the Surfside condominium tower that remains standing after its partial collapse will be demolished on Sunday night. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava announcing at a news conference that prep work on the remaining section of the tower had been completed, and the demolition is expected to come before 3 a.m. Eastern Monday morning. The search and rescue mission has been suspended as demolition crews prepare the site. Workers will resume the search as soon as the site is declared safe after the demolition. And more than 150,000 people have evacuated from eastern Cuba as Tropical Storm Elsa approaches the island. The storm killed three people as it passed by the Dominican Republic and island of St. Lucia. The National Hurricane Center says the storm is expected to weaken as it passes over central Cuba, where heavy flooding is possible. The storm is forecast to turn towards Florida on Monday and threaten the west coast of the state on Tuesday. This is USA Radio News. The Border Patrol says their agents encountered 5,800 illegal immigrants per day in the month of May, with similar levels expected when June's numbers are released. Congressman Buddy Carter says numbers like that are proof of the disaster at the border. The Georgia Republican was one of a group of GOP lawmakers who joined former President Trump last week on a tour of the border in Texas. He tells Fox News that the crisis he witnessed was created by the policies of the Biden administration.
Well, no question about it. We've got a full-blown disaster at the border. It's a humanitarian disaster. It's a national security disaster. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, if they want to know what created this, all they have to do is look in the mirror, because what they'll see is their policies. Under the Trump administration, we had one of the most secure borders that we've ever had. Now the Biden administration has reversed those policies. They've reversed the construction of the wall. Now they're not constructing the wall at all. They reversed the stay in Mexico policy. Now they're trying to reverse Title 42. All of that has led to what we've witnessed here.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Attention Americans with an IRA or 401k. This is a message from the desk of Chuck Norris. It reads, fellow Americans, today we are facing uncertain times, higher taxes, higher inflation, higher government spending, and higher debt. As a result, millions of Americans could see their life savings disappear. Now, I worked hard for my money, and I've worked even harder to keep it. And there's a small secret I learned along the way to keep Uncle Sam's hands out of my pocket. Let me show you right now. Pick up your phone and call 866-967-2808 and speak to a professional at Gold Co. to get a free copy of my 2021 special report. That's 866-967-2808. Call now and you'll learn the simple steps I took to protect myself. Now is not the time to sit back. It's time to fight back. Call 866-967-2808 and ask for my 2021 special report. If you don't fight for your money, who will? Call 866-967-2808 now.
Excited to introduce you to Bill and Patrick Pardue. They've written a book, really, called Wolf Creek, that is a game changer in for so many different reasons, and we're going to talk about why in a second. And this is a father and son duo, and in talking with the son, Patrick learned out a lot about his father by helping him with Wolf Creek, and as his dad would say, I'll steal his words, cleaning it up for him, as he said. So first of all, Bill, let's talk about your journey to Wolf Creek and tell us what the story is about.
Well, it was my first job out of college. I'd gotten a degree from University of Texas as a zoologist, and I just liked the outdoors. So there was an advertisement for a wilderness camping program. You got to go canoeing, mountain climbing, the whole bit, you know, everything that boys like to do, men like to do, everybody likes to do. So I didn't realize what the job was until I actually got there and the boys arrived, because they were really, you know, they had been kids who'd been neglected their whole lives. Nobody ever wanted them. A lot of them didn't know who their parents were. They'd lived in foster homes their whole lives. Some of them had, you know, they obviously had problems. There were sociopaths and psychopaths in that group. There were people who, a particular boy in particular who tortured animals. And it's just a sad story. You know, they were at the end of the line. They had come from Chicago. City of Chicago couldn't handle them. The state of Chicago couldn't handle them. They sent them out to the boys' ranch in Texas. They couldn't handle them. So they just bought 10 acres out in the middle of nowhere, No water, no power, no anything. And they dumped the kids out there with us. And that was it.
Wow. And you say, and that was it. And, Patrick, you went through the manuscript. And when you were reading about what your dad did and what happened with these kids, what really jumped out at you? And, you know, your dad did a great job of describing some of the things these kids had been through and how lost they were. And now here they are in the middle of nowhere. What did you get from that in reading that and looking at that?
One thing was definitely how hard it would have been to survive that and how strong you'd have to be to make it out of that as a counselor and, you know, as a teenager as well, as one of the kids in the camp. Again, like my dad said, how much suffering these kids had been through and where they'd come from. And also my dad, to see another side of him again, really helping these kids. And acting like a father figure to them. That was very good for me to see that as well.
So for you, Bill, once you get there and you're in the middle of nowhere, as you described it, what did you see happen to these kids? What was the transformation like?
Of course, they were a wild group when they got off the bus. You know, I had to have a fight with both the leader and the enforcer within the first hour. Just to be able to stay there. I mean, that was the real interview, was with those boys coming at you. But what they learned was they learned, number one, they could trust, there were some people they could trust. And those were the counselors, including me. There were some people who cared about them and who loved them. And some of them had never been loved by anyone. They just didn't know what it looked like. You know, they knew what a punch in the face looked like or kick in the head or whatever they'd been getting, but they did not know what love looked like. So it took a while to prove myself to them, but eventually they said, okay, this guy might be all right. We'll let him stay around for a while. Because they did set some counselors on fire and they did other things and they sent them home. A lot of counselors didn't last 2 weeks. So, it was definitely survival of the fittest.
Yeah. What do you hope, Bill, that people take away from reading Wolf Creek? And we're speaking to Bill and Patrick Pardue. What do you hope they take away?
Well, I think I told you a short story before about my older brother calling me. He's like 74, never called me really. We weren't that close. He calls me one night and he's sobbing on the phone. I'm thinking, what could happen? What happened? And he could barely get it out. But he said, I just finished reading your book. So that's what I want people to get. And I'm a passionate person. So when I write with that passion. I try to dump it all into the book so people can feel it. They can feel what it's like to be out in the woods surrounded by 10 boys who are terrors, right? They're gang members. They're this, they're that. How do you feel in that situation? That's what I try to do in all my books, is to give people a sense of, whoa, that's scary.
It would be scary. Patrick, how proud are you of your dad and the fact that you got to be involved in the project?
Very proud, both of the fact that he was involved in this from the beginning. He was a counselor, and then from the fact that he was able to write it down all those years later and make a book out of it, and that he let me, you know, come back and edit it and fix it up.
Yeah. So we also have another book we want to mention, and of course you can get Wolf Creek on Amazon, A Mystic's Pictorial Guide to Spiritual Evolution. Who doesn't want some of that? Patrick and I are both sitting here. This is radio, and we're saying, yeah, bring it on. So, Bill, you're so passionate. Give it to all of us. Tell us what the book's about there. I think it's pretty obvious, and I read it, so I know. But tell everybody else listening.
Well, the encapsulated version is this, and I think I told you this before. If you take all the holy men that have ever existed, all the gurus, all the Bibles, all the Korans, all the Bhagavad Gitas, and you put them in a big blender and you blend them up, and then you pour that through a cloth to screen out everything that isn't pure spirit, that isn't purely divine. So all the rituals go out and all the money goes out and all the chalices go out and all that goes out. And what you have left is this. How do you get into contact with the higher consciousness, whether you just call it pure consciousness, cosmic consciousness, God, whatever you want to call it, life force. There is that force out there that an individual can get into contact with that has traditionally been called God, right? And that's what the book's about. And the way I did it was because I read so many of those books, and they just put you to sleep. Oh, my God. And then they're in five different languages. And what does this mean? So this is the essence, I think, of all religion. It's what people need to do to raise their spiritual consciousness. And which is, you know, the first one is, and there's a corresponding picture, because a picture is worth 1,000 words, right? So I had 70 pages. So I just tried to simplify it for people so that they could see, they could go through that. So it's really a living puzzle. If you can go through each one of those pictures and get the message that is there, and of course for everybody it's going to be a different message, then your level of consciousness is going to just begin to open up. And when I say raise it, you're just opening up, right? The old thing, open heart, open mind. Unless you have an open mind, you can't have an open heart. So that's what it's about.
Did you have a favorite picture from the book?
You know, I do. There's a picture of a woman, young woman, obviously, in nature with a huge cataract of water coming down in front of her, and she's just looking at it. And I can't remember exactly what I said, but it said that no matter what you think, no matter what you own, you cannot freeze life. Life is a moving, living thing like that, you know. And if you really want to experience life, you have to jump in. So she's looking at this life passing by her, just changing every minute. And if you really want to experience life, you have to let go. You can't keep people out. You have to let it in. You have to let go. You have to feel the bad things, feel the good things, because it's always a whole, right? You can't have a bad thing without a good thing. You can't have a good thing without a bad thing. And it's all there just for us to experience and to take in. And we have to trust the process. We have to trust the cosmos to be smarter than we are, so that, because it told me, I mean, I did this over 2.5 years, and every one of those things was an inspiration to me. I would read it later and say, I'm not smart enough to write what I wrote. You know, you hear these stories about that, but it actually happened, so.
I love it. And you can get this book on Amazon too. Patrick, what do you think of that? I think that I can, you know, again, we're speaking where we can see each other for everybody that's listening to us. And both of us, you and I, are like those dogs that they put in the window. We're shaking our heads fast and furious. Yes, yes, give us more of that. But it's true. And it is a beautiful book, but there is something about matching the pictures, the words. And I love the description your dad said of throwing it all in the blender. And what is it really that's coming out here? What do you think?
Well, I've had spiritual experiences of my own, so I can connect to a lot of what he said in the book as well. And I really definitely connect to what he just said about life and being able to experiencing it. You have to jump in. You know, you can't hold back. If you want to experience everything, the good and the bad, you have to just, you know, take a breath and just jump right in. And that's how you have spiritual experiences that are worth anything, or romantic experiences or anything. You can't be afraid to just jump in and just live how you want to.
Yeah. I have a feeling that, Patrick, you've jumped in a lot, because the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and I can tell just in our conversation that that's probably happened here. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
What a delight to have you both on the show. And again, you can pick up both of these books on Amazon. Bill and Patrick Pardue, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
The way things are going these days, do you ever ask yourself, when is the other shoe going to drop? The warning signs are everywhere. The next big danger is food shortages. That's why Americans are learning to be self-reliant and getting their emergency long-term food storage from My Patriot Supply. We're America's trusted leader in emergency preparedness. Over the past decade, My Patriot Supply has served millions of families and helped them prepare. Our delicious meal kits average 2,000 calories per day and stay fresh in storage up to 25 years. This is reliable food that will be there when disasters strike. And with the way things are going, you should grab some now. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a starter kit for each member of your family, and we'll ship everything quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait and scramble with the masses when the news breaks. Instead, prepare today for what's coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
This next lady is just blows my mind that at 3 years old, she could milk a cow. I have desperately tried to milk cows, and in my 20s, 30s, and yet, yeah, in 40s, I could not milk a cow. So I think I needed her instruction or her family to teach me what to do. And it just goes to show you that where there's a will, there's a way. And if you think back to the Depression and how life was, you know, were the people stronger than we are? Are we kind of soft compared to what they were like? And just times were different. So the name of the book is called When Great Granny Was Small Like Me. I love that title. And it came about in a really unique way. It's a children's book. So we're going off to New Zealand right now. And I know there's some people that are listening to us there. But for those of you who aren't, just picture in your mind, we're not too far necessarily from Christchurch. And Alice Love is with us. She's in our virtual world green room. Hey, Alice, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's lovely to speak to you.
It's lovely to speak to you, too. And you heard me say that I'm very serious about that. I'm a capable woman, but I find it difficult to milk a cow. And you learned at three. So you just did it. You learned, you did it, and you milked cows.
That's right.
Was it difficult? I mean, it wasn't because it was the Depression, but you didn't really realize it was the Depression, right? Because you had, what, you had a sister and three brothers, and you worked on the farm.
That's right, yes. that's just how life was, and we were just so happy. I don't know where the mum and dad were, but we were.
I love that. I don't know how they felt, but I know how we felt. And you didn't even know, like, it didn't bother you. You said to me off the air you didn't have electricity. I can't imagine. You think of younger kids now, and they've got all kinds of, they've got phones that they play games on, and the games and the things, the video things that they do. Everything is based, a lot of things are based on electronics and having electricity. And you didn't have any electricity, but you said you had candlelight, right?
That's right, yes. And we did have a petrol light, too, in our kitchen and our special sitting room. And that was an even better light than electricity. It was quite amazing. It probably wasn't terribly safe, but...
but you could see. Yeah, so take us through what life was like. What was a typical day for you? Because you talk about it in the book. What was a day like?
It always started early. A little bit before the sun got up, we were all up. And first job was to milk the cows. So we all migrated to the cow shed. And, of course, Mum and Dad couldn't leave us on our own, so we went with them to the cow shed. And you don't just hang around when there's lots of cows to milk. You get there and have a go.
Right. I like that, you have a go. So you have a go at the cows, you do that. And then there were other things, there were other animals, I shouldn't say things, there were other animals on the farm that helped the family survive, right? Like there were sheep, you had sheep.
That's right. Sheep, and the work was done on the farm was done with horses, so we had a lot of horses, draft horses and ones we could ride as well. There were about 20 of those on the farm as well. And so we just about grew up on horseback with our dad.
Wow. So you learned how to ride too, because you had to, like you said, you had a lot of horses and you had to learn how to do that.
That's right. And when the men were going out with their teams in the morning, we would go to help them harness them up. This would happen. We'd after the cows, there was breakfast, and then we'd go and deal with the horses. And, put them into, put our harness on, and then we had to travel back near the house, and we would ride on the horses, which were great big horses, and we were little people, but that was all right.
Wow. So I'm just thinking in my mind, I mean, that's really exciting. There are a lot of exciting things that happen to you as a child because you got to experience all those things some of those things you just mentioned, you know, doing the cows, having the sister and the brother around you and being able to experience that whole family thing. And you know, what was breakfast like? Because I have to say, if I was part of your brood and I was on a horse and I was doing all those things, I'd be exhausted. And I think even as a young child, I'd probably ask for 10 flapjacks and eggs and I don't know. But what was a typical, like, family breakfast meal like?
Family breakfast would be porridge and toast and either eggs or mutton chops.
Yum.
Because, well, they had to kill their own meat. And in the sun, with no electricity, you couldn't leave meat sitting around. So meat was on the menu, you know, most of the time.
Wow.
Just to get through it.
Yeah. So what happened was your niece said there are no books that talk about what life was like before. So she asked you if you could write it. And when you're tasked to write that, because, you know, she's running a daycare and she's got children and she wants them to know what life was like, what was it like for you to write this story, to put it together?
Well, I really enjoyed it. But I had to do a lot of research and to find the exact equipment that we had in the house and roundabout. I had to go visit museums all around Canterbury to try and find the exact make and type that we used. And I found everything except the iron, the flat iron for ironing clothes. And my husband and I kept visiting museums, and then I said to Ken, I think we might just have one out in the back shed. And we did. We had two of them.
Wow, so you already had it. When kids read the book, When Great Granny Was Small Like Me, and you can get this book on Amazon, Alice Love's book. She's just delightful. What do you hope they take away from reading the book?
I think it'll give them something else to think about.
Right, something else to think about how life is, how life is now.
Like, and they might even think it might have been rather fun.
I think it would be rather fun. You have me wanting to go and learn how to do all these things. So, yeah, and it, just a different world. And I guess I think that, to me, one of the big takeaways is it's about family and love and caring and doing what your parents did. So to you, it was just a great, wonderful adventure. It was life, and you were just going along. It wasn't, oh, my gosh, it's the Depression. We're panicked, and we've got to figure out what we're going to do, and there's no electricity, and how do we get along? They found ways.
That's right. Yes.
Right? Yeah. This has to be neat for your kids. What do your kids say? Because you had six children. What do your kids say about this book?
I think they quite enjoy it too. and the grandchildren and the great grandchildren.
Wow. So how big is this family? Have you taken over New Zealand? Is Canterbury all the Love family?
Well, I've got 24 grandchildren and 26 great-grandchildren.
Wow, that's a lot. So a family reunion for all of you is just, you fill up a big square.
That's right.
Yeah, how fun. What is what is your fondest memory as a kid? If you had to pick out one memory, and I know it's tough, but what is your fondest memory?
I think my fondest memory is to see how my parents got on together. And they'd be sitting at the table at lunchtime. Both had a very busy morning, but they'd be holding hands under the table. And after lunch, they'd go out into the garden round looking at the roses, still holding hands. And that always sticks with me.
Wow. What a lesson for you, because how wonderful that they were so close like that, and you, as being young, could see that.
That's how we thought every family was. And it's rather sad to find it's not quite like that.
It is really rather sad. Well, I think your book is wonderful, and it's a great gift to anybody who has children, because there aren't stories like this out there. You're very unique, Alice Love, and this book is wonderful. And like I said, you can get it on Amazon. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.